Hey, welcome to the show. You are listening to the Rusik Podcast. We are a roots music podcast based out of Nashville, Tennessee, where we talk to the local music scene and beyond.
Today, we have Zach Bryson. He is a singer-songwriter based out of Nashville.
If you are listening to this episode on Spotify or any other platform, you're going to want to head on over to our YouTube channel at Rusik Podcast. Over there, you can check out live performances with our guests, including today's guest, Zach Bryson. Go check that out for us. Give those videos a like, subscribe, turn the notification bell on, all that good stuff. It helps us out so much. Enjoy. Well, thanks to the sunglasses, no one knows if we're high or not.
Oh, that's why. Yeah that was my secret.
Totally not why we're wearing
them. Yeah. So how long have you been in?
What we're doing is we're trying to project a beautiful sunny day.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah,
look at this. On what is maybe the coldest day I've ever seen in Nashville.
It's pretty gnarly out.
It's pretty cold. It's like 17 degrees right
now. How many winters have you seen in Nashville? How long? I have no idea how long you've been here for.
It'll be 3 years in January.
Okay.
Where'd you come from?
3 years.
sounds like an interview, dude. This is hilarious.
I know. This is part of it that I was like...
Let me get my notepad out here, guys.
Well, you know what's so funny is I was like thinking about what we were going to talk about and stuff, and I was kind of dreading the idea of having to do that because I was just kind of like... I was like... so much of my... And this could be a whole other conversation about childhood traumas, but so much of my upbringing is trying to have something that goes somewhere somewhat entertaining. It's no like surprise that I'm in the entertainment business, if you want to call it that, because everything is like, oh, okay, well, that'll have a punchline, and we'll talk about that, and I'll do this. But I never have a good one whenever it's like, where are you from? And I'm like, oh, here we go, a bunch of
way to drop the ball so early.
No, we lived in Massachusetts before this.
Okay.
I'll find something funny in here. It'll be hilarious. There you go. We lived in Massachusetts before this. I lived there with my wife, and then we actually got married here in Nashville when we first moved to town. But we were living in Massachusetts, and then before that, I lived in New Orleans, and then before that, I lived for about 7 years in Portland, Oregon.
Okay.
And I'm from Eugene, Oregon, originally. You can't tell because I'm wearing shoes, but I'm from Eugene, Oregon, originally. There we go. We got something.
You got there.
We got something.
Yeah, Brian and I moved out here from Boston.
Oh, great.
It's an interesting music town.
Interesting.
It's fun.
Town.
There's some great spots.
There you ever go to Club Passim?
Yes. I used to intern there. Yeah.
Love Club Passim.
Great
thing. Yeah, they're great. But, you know, that's an interesting thing. When I was first kind of touring around, probably like right out of high school, so like 2010 to like 2015-16, everyone just kind of avoided the Northeast completely. Nobody really went up there to play any kind of like roots music of any kind or any. It was interesting, you know, Berkeley being there and stuff. You'd think there was like this, but there was never anything. And then it wasn't till I moved up there that I realized, like, oh, there's like a million places to play. A bunch of people that want to see this music, and from the Hudson Valley up to Maine and like all this stuff. And I love the Northeast.
Yeah, there was a big scene for that kind of stuff, that kind of roots music that I love there.
Yeah.
That I shouldn't say surprised by, but I was pleasantly happy there, you know. Passim was a great spot. There were a lot of great open mics at that time. And we moved out here 7 years ago.
Okay.
There was a lot of great open mics out there too. And it was just a really fun music scene. I feel like the issue for us, I think, is it felt quite contained. It felt very, very, and not that it's innately a bad thing, but I think for, you know, we wanted to make our living playing music and we failed miserably. No,
that's why how this podcast started.
You're failing up. I think.
Started out of failure.
Exactly. Yeah. But so I think with that in mind, you know, wanting to play music in that way, we thought, you know, maybe sticking around here isn't the best way to go.
Yeah.
But that being said,
totally.
It is a really fun music town.
Well, that was our big impetus. Hell yeah. Nailed it. Big impetus.
That is the biggest word that's coming out of this podcast now.
But the biggest impetus behind us moving to Nashville was I was just like, I moved up there like early in 2021. And it was like, it was kind of when we all agreed to stop playing music live. And I was like, okay, well, great. I'll move to Massachusetts, do a little wood shedding, write some songs, hang out. Mm-hmm. And then I moved there, and then like 2 months later, people were like, we're doing shows again. And I was like, okay, great. Now I live in Massachusetts. And all that. But it ended up being really great because I learned that Massachusetts and, you know, between Western Mass and upstate New York and Vermont and up to Maine, like there's a bunch of great places to play and great people to play with. And I was able to like actually explore that a little bit and like, you know, spend some time up there. It was really great. But then when we ended up leaving Massachusetts, I was like, the only logical place seems like Nashville because I've just been so isolated from all my friends. And it's like, it's the exact opposite here.
Did you have any folks you knew out here before coming out here, or was it just
a few? But I had moved from Portland to New Orleans because I had known a bunch of people in New Orleans. I had originally moved to New Orleans in 2011. It was the first time I went there, and met a bunch of folks, and it was great. It was like the best time ever. And then moved back to Oregon for a while, but bounced back and forth a lot, but stayed mostly in Oregon. And then when I was leaving there, I was like, okay, it's Nashville or New Orleans. And New Orleans was just the place I knew the most people. So I mm-hmm. went there, and that was really great. And then, that was September of 2019. So I got about 6 solid months, and then boom, it was like no more music, no more going out. Now you just are trapped in New Orleans. It's like, okay, cool.
For that brief window where you did have something going on there, what was the music scene that you were exposed to out there? What kind of stuff were you
around? It was great. It was like the bands from New Orleans are just the best. It's awesome. So it's like Des Lons, Sabine McCullough, you know, Nicky Bob was down there, Chris Acker. It's so great. Pretty much everybody that's like now Garhole was like, you know, hanging around down there. And, it's great. It's always been just the best time down
there. Yeah. I've been a fan of the Deslon stuff for years. I'd love to get some of those guys on.
Yeah. They're awesome. They're the best. Yeah. Those are some of the first people I met when I moved to New Orleans in 2011. And then from there, it was like a bunch of, this was the great thing about it is I moved there in 2011, playing music really, really poorly, but so was everybody else. So everybody was like, yeah, get in here. You know, we all suck, but you know. You suck a little more than others, but you don't suck as much as some. Come on, we'll hang out. which is a really interesting thing because I've carried that with me the rest of my time. I run into, you know, unbeknownst to me until a few years ago, I didn't realize they still keep making people after I was born. So there's a whole new batch of 20-year-old kids trying to play music.
And it just doesn't stop. We just can't catch a break, dude.
I know. And I'm transitioning into my, you know, elder statehood uh-huh. along the way without really realizing it. I just kind of remember that all the time of like how awesome it was when people were like, hey, you suck, but come on, mm-hmm. you can play. Like, let's figure it out.
There's something, yeah, there is something kind of, it's encouraging in a weird way when you know that you're still the bottom of the totem pole, but but there's a top of the totem pole.
And that people are like not, you know, it's not that, you know, I feel like you go like, I'm not as good as that person, so they probably won't like me. And everybody at that point is just like, nah, it doesn't really matter. Like,
yeah, most people don't care.
Yeah. It's like, I'm probably not going to listen to you out of like, you know, I could listen to anything. I listen to Van Morrison. I'm not going to listen to you. But like, you know, there's a certain amount of like, oh, okay, yeah, no, that doesn't matter. What matters is like, are you like a decent person to hang out with? And, you know, are you an asshole or not? And so there was a lot of that happened then. And then I wasn't the only one who moved back kind of where I had come from. So like a bunch of people had. And so that kind of opened up for me. It was like post that whole experience, 2011, 2012, I like all of a sudden had like friends in almost every town. Mm-hmm. So it was like, oh, well, if I want to go there, I'll just at least have a place to stay if I don't have a show. And then it like turned into like, but probably could get me a show there too. So it opened this whole network of like,
That's so nice.
I guess I'll go do that stuff. So that was a really cool thing to come out of that. And that was like through meeting, you know, Riley and Sam and all those guys and just everybody kicking around down there at that time. And, yeah, and then when I moved back, it was like a whole, like, I had seen it kind of slowly going, but everybody had just kind of been, you know, doing their things, you know, putting in their reps, and they were, like, amazing and incredible.
When you got out to Nashville, what did you find was the biggest maybe not surprised, but the biggest difference between here and all those other music towns that you'd been prior?
Well, I don't know how much of a difference I found. But I think I was surprised. I think I had a preconceived notion that I was going to have to like deal with a lot of like snakes, like just like social climbing and just like fake stuff. And I kind of mentally prepared myself. And then when I showed up, everybody was just like, not that.
Yeah.
Couldn't have been more like welcoming and nice and genuine. And everybody just likes to play music, and, pretty quickly fell in with like a bunch of the great, you know, like, you know, we talked about Alex Buchanan and Chris Weisbecker and like those guys and Corey Parsons and, just a bunch of like really great folks who,
for those who are listening, who this is not their, you know, this is not kind of their life experience, right? What is it like when you get to a new town and there's no gig? There's no, sure. You know, like there's sort of nothing on the book,
oh,
so to speak.
Sure,
what is that like when you get to a new place?
Yeah.
And it's just, all right, how am I going to make this work?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it helps to have friends. So like I've always made the decisions based on like having friends, you know, besides when we moved to Massachusetts, by the way, we lived in Ipswich. You know,
oh, okay. Ipswich, yeah.
Up on the North Shore. nice roast beef sandwich over there on the North Shore. So that was different. I only knew my wife, so I moved up there, and that was enough. That was awesome. And but yeah, so it helps to have some friends. And I remember when we first moved to town here, my buddy Todd DeWaite. I don't know if you see him play around town. He's great, but he was doing Stay Up Late with Todd DeWaite at the Underdog. So yeah, it was after
Legion.
Legion, you'd go up there. You'd stumble up the hill or whatever, and
all 5 feet.
Yeah, and go watch him play. And so he's like, well, come by sometime, because I've known Todd a long time. And he's like, come by and you can get up and do a song. And I thought, well, you're new in town, you might as well go get up, do a song and all that stuff. Even though I'm not really into like staying up late with or without Todd. I've stayed up with Todd many times. Stayed up without Todd many times. Both are great. So I got up, and so he was like, okay, well, I'm going to pass the tip jar. You get up and do a song. And I was like, okay. And it was kind of a block he does where he like has a bunch of guest singers come up. And I went up first and I did my song and I felt good about it. I was like, oh, this is great. And then the next like eight people that went after me were like the best things I'd ever seen. I was like, how is this even possible? There's like they're like taking guitar solos and stuff. And it just was that kind of face moment where I was like, it's Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah.
It's like when you reach the being the best at another town, you go, well, I should move to Nashville. It's like been that way since the, you know, dawn of
musical time.
Yeah. At least making money off it. And so it's like, you know, I was like, duh, of course everybody here is really, really amazing.
Thank God you went up first there.
I know. That's the other thing too. I was like, well, thank God that's over with. I don't have to like, I would have definitely beefed it had I gone up after some of them, but it was great to see. And I was like, oh yeah, right. This is like, it's a really beautiful thing. It's like, I don't know if it takes like enough time to realize that you're not jealous, you're inspired. Like there's this moment where you go like, oh, I wish I could do that. And then you go like, oh no, I can do that. I just wish I had practiced enough to do that at the same time that person, hey, you know, there's like very few times I see somebody do something that I like, am like, I could never do. It's like, oh yeah, no. And like, we're all capable of this thing. But we just all have to be putting in the time to like get there. And for some people, it comes sooner than others, all this stuff. There's all that kind of thing. But just the feeling of seeing somebody play here in town and not being like, I wish I had what they had, but just being like, wow, that inspires me to like try to do that thing. And of course, like, you know, it all comes out in the wash. If you just like, you know, want to play guitar really well so you can show off, it's probably not going to happen. You're not going to be driven to do it. But if you see somebody play something and you go, that's the exact phrasing that thing deserved, and that's perfect, and I wish I could do that. And in fact, I can do that because I saw him do it or her do it, and I can figure out what they did. And it's that kind of thing. It's like that I think in my younger years, I think I mistook that for jealousy.
Yeah.
But it was actually being inspired.
It can manifest that way. Especially because... there's this famine mentality that can come out mm-hmm. in a place like Nashville where that famine mentality is not necessary.
Yeah.
Because there is so much, I mean, I guess by definition there is a finite amount of opportunity, but you're not hitting that point anytime soon. And so there's so much on the table, I think for me, a part of it was like, you know, I found as a young person moving out here that I hated when I would catch myself in those moments.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's for some people, I think a lot of it too is, I'm sure, just sort of personality dependent and how you are as, you know, whether it's how competitive you are or whatnot. And at a certain point, I think you have to learn that. That you can just enjoy the ride, and you can just yeah. enjoy the fact that all of these other great musicians get to have all these great, awesome things occur for yeah. them too. And it's like, as soon as you start to recognize that as a person, you start to become way happier.
Yeah.
And not only that, I find that most people tend to become more successful once they realize that too, because that conflict isn't there anymore. Mm-hmm. Just that conflict within yourself. All of a sudden it's, you know, your buddy over here getting this great opportunity is not an opportunity taken from you. It's, oh yeah. my God, here's this amazing thing that opened right. up for this person. And I think right. once people kind of recognize that, and that's hard for a lot of people, I think, especially because the subset of people that, like you said earlier, are moving to Nashville are the people yeah. who tend to be very successful in whatever field that they're in, wherever they're coming from.
Yeah.
And so you have those people, you have all of that sort of conflict of personality coming into play when you have those people getting here and then realize, like, oh shit, like, why isn't that happening to me?
Yeah.
And it becomes, I found when I recognized that in myself, and it probably took a lot longer than it should have, that like, I detest that.
Yeah.
It can be such a, when it can be just nothing but a positive thing
yeah.
in life, you mm-hmm. know?
Yeah. I think so. I think that there'll be like a quote every now and again from somebody who has made it to a point where we all call success, usually some, like, you know, very rich, very famous musician who is like, I forgot to enjoy any of it. Mm-hmm. I forgot to actually enjoy what was going on. I was so hell bent on getting to this point that I forgot to, like, you know, savor the moment.
Do you think that's what it takes, though, to get there? I mean, I'm not...
Well, that's the thing. I'm the last person. I'm the last person to give you any kind of...
For you, what is success? When you define that, what is success for you?
I think it's being as honest as possible. I think about success in terms of... the art itself. So I'm a songwriter. That's what I would categorize myself as if I was to, like, narrow it down to anything. And musician is a little too much credit to give myself that. So for me, anytime that I'm like, why am I not satisfied with this thing? Why do I feel like I've failed in doing this thing? And it's like, well, I'm approaching a subject that I'm a little timid on and I'm holding back and this isn't going to work. Or I'm trying to, I'm holding back because I'm trying to, because when I've been free and open and not holding back, it sounded like something I don't think is good or cool. Not good, but cool. And so, like, I'm afraid of coming off like this because... I want to write this rock and roll song or this country song or something or a folk song. And I don't want to be seen as like this other thing. But that other thing is the truth. And that's like, you know, folk music at its essence is just like, here is exactly who I am as a person feeling this thing. And I think that a lot of that can't be detached. And when it is, that's when I find that I am not interested anymore. And I'm usually, that's when I find that someone's being disingenuous, is just when, you know, you've kind of crafted this thing so that you look a certain way. And, you know, there's definitely, like, I've written things and been like, oof, that line every time is going to make me squirm because I'm exposing myself in such a way where I'm going like, yeah, I feel like a dork for doing that or whatever, you know.
I think there's this thing in art, too, that I don't understand where people feel like art shouldn't make you uncomfortable.
Yeah, right.
Or shouldn't make you...
Well, I think, and that's the thing that a lot of people who who write very, I don't think this is true, but I think people use it as an excuse when they're like, I'm too like, introspective or something to be mainstream, because mm-hmm. most people don't want to like go as deep as I go when I write a song. They want to keep it on the surface level with pop stuff and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But of course that's not true. You have Randy Newman and Paul Simon and all these great, very introspective songwriters, who have managed to go great places in culture. But I think that there are times
I agree with that to a degree. Only because like you use the example of Randy Newman, who's one of my favorite songwriters mm-hmm. in the world. I agree. Randy Newman has over the last 60 years carved out this sect for himself in the mm-hmm. music world. But if you go on Spotify and you look up Randy Newman, all of the songs it's going to recommend you are Pixar, which again, don't get me wrong, that's great.
You've got a friend in me.
No, I agree. I agree.
What are we doing? One of the most popular songs ever.
I agree. And I'm just playing the devil's advocate here a little bit, but at the same time, it's like that stuff, I understand and completely, I think that's a great thing that someone like that can be platformed in that way. So then those who are interested can peek behind the curtain and see that genius.
Yeah.
And not to say that there isn't genius in that stuff. I mean, the music for all of those films that are much more well known, that's great. In and of itself, great art, I think.
Totally.
But that's different than Good Old Boys. That's different.
Yes.
Than, you know what
yes,
I mean?
Yes, like, yes, yes, yes. And Good Old Boys.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm sorry.
Putting any track off of Good Old Boys in a Toy Story would be so funny. It'd be so funny.
Just open up Andy's birthday party with rednecks.
Yeah, no. But, but a song like You've Got a Friend in Me.
Yeah.
Beautiful song. An incredible song.
Banger.
Yeah. And it made its way into the hearts of millions because it's relatable. You can relate to it. But so that goes back to what I was saying about, like, when I have a line in a song, I go, I feel too exposed with this line. I feel a little bit cringy because maybe it's phrased in a way that, although is honest, is like not very like artful, but that's kind of the art of it that I'm trying to go for, is like trying to just be plain spoken, whatever. Those are always the songs that afterwards people come up to me and they go, that one, I liked that one. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're saying they didn't like any of the other ones, but they point out that one and they go, that one I related to that one. And so, I think that's very, as far as the art of it goes, that's successful to me. Mm-hmm. It's like I was able to connect with another human being while being honest about who I am as a human being. And together we are experiencing a moment in life where we feel seen and connected. And I guess in a weird way, there's like this, however fleeting the moment is, there's a moment where we both are realizing we're the same exact thing. Mm-hmm. And that there is no difference between us. There is no separation. We are the same, entity.
Yeah, taking a different form. The universe experiencing itself.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's the art. That's why we all experience these things. That's why we want to hear somebody talk about something, whether it's a comedian or someone to paint something or a film or, any of this stuff. It's like we all just want to find out who... We all want to find out who each other are in the hopes that we find out that we're all... the same.
And I think that, at least for myself, my experience, all of the art, whatever world it happens to take up, that is the most impactful in my life and that has been the most impactful in my life, all of it, when I first experienced it, there was a knee-jerk reaction of, keep this away from me.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. All of the stuff that has the most profoundly affected me as a mm-hmm. person... Without exception, there is that initial knee jerk of what is this? Mm-hmm. And I feel like that is, it's such a necessity when you're trying to, because this is I guess my issue with something like, and I say issue like this keeps me up at night, but like this is I guess kind of my issue with things like, pop music, right?
Sure.
And Brian and I discussed this, but The problem with something like that, where you've got five writers in a room together trying to create something that's as universal and as easily accessible as possible, is you can't get to universality from that. You can only get there through something that is completely idiosyncratic and unique to you as a person. That's why when you write a line like that, that maybe comes across to you as distinct in a way that you're not comfortable with, or that gives you that feeling of, okay, do I want to present in this way? Mm-hmm. It's those moments that I think we experience art and we are compelled by it, because those are the moments where you can relate to a person on a human level. And it's like, it's almost this thing by like, again, there's a room for pop music in the world, and I'm not just, God knows I don't want to just sit here and shit on pop music, because that'd be silly. Like, but
some of it gets pretty deep.
Oh yeah, but
what's the one about I drive past your house alone now? Yeah. What's that song that was really popular like 2 years ago?
No, again,
if I was 16, and I had just got my license,
yeah,
and then my boyfriend dumps me, and that song comes out. Fan for life.
Yeah, no, again, and fan again, like, and that's why I'm not, in no way am I just kind of dismissing that stuff, but I do think that one of the things that I have recognized as patterns in the art that I love is there has to be that singular idiosyncratic voice, that is the thing that we're compelled by, because otherwise, it's like you just have nothing to connect with on a human level.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Yeah, no, I think that's right. I think also it's through experiencing those songs that make you a little too uncomfortable that you break down, in general, your wall against that kind of feeling anyways. And then you start kind of going off and on. Because are you from Boston, either of you?
No. So
you moved there for...
We went there both for school.
School, okay.
Sadly. And then, no.
No.
And then
a lot of people do that.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it was
a lot
great.
Of people go to Harvard, guys. Yeah, don't even be embarrassed about it. Okay. Don't,
yeah, we shouldn't be putting
you
ourselves
don't have to
down.
Be embarrassed
it's too
by
Harvard
going
graduates.
To Harvard.
Yeah.
MIT for me.
Yeah. Right, that's the other one there.
Yeah.
Yeah. We went to school out there. Brian's from SoCal. I lived in SoCal for a while growing up too.
All right.
And
I could tell by the sunglasses.
There you go.
I like how both of you immediately had sunglasses, and I was like, okay.
There you go.
We got a couple.
San Diego. Couple of them guys.
What are we talking about?
Dude, you know what I'm excited for?
San Diego.
Oh my God.
All right.
We're gonna derail here. We'll get back to you and
you guys ever
in
go
second.
To Oscars here in town?
Oscars.
Which one's that?
The burrito place?
So. No.
It's a good time.
Okay.
I mean, listen. I know.
Where, yeah,
listen.
Where is
listen.
This?
All due respect.
I'm always looking for a good burrito.
All due respect to the burritos in San Diego. They are the,
goats.
Probably, honestly, maybe the best in the world.
Yeah.
And I'm including Mexico in the world.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, they're incredible. They did in San Diego to a burrito is incredible. But here in town, locally, it's hard to get a good burrito here in Nashville,
That's
Tennessee.
So I know. There's a couple of spots.
But Oscars is very good. Shout out to Oscar. Remember we were going to do this
there
at
we
the
go.
Beginning?
Okay.
Where is Oscars?
Before the cameras were rolling.
I didn't even know you existed, Oscar. We want
there's
you as a sponsor.
There's one, I think, at the end of Elm Hill Pike, and then I go to the one in the Nations. There's one in the Nations.
Okay. I'll have to check that out.
Not far from 51st Street. Deli, also a great establishment here in town.
Have you been to Lindo, Mexico? It's over by D's.
That's my favorite burrito in town.
No, I don't think I have.
It's like a purple building with art all over it. They got like a smoker out front. It's like a block down from D's.
Oh, yes.
Out of all the Mexican food I've had here, that's definitely
most
the best.
Legit.
Most authentic.
Okay. Yeah. I'm going.
I will definitely check out
Oscars.
Yeah. This is the real reason
this
we
is
do
the
show
reason.
Is to like get food
recommendations. Yeah.
I can tell you the whole time we were talking about the boring subject of an artistic integrity. The whole time I was going, when are we going to get to falafel? I gotta get to falafel.
I do have to say though, I don't think I'm ever.
Where's the best spot for falafel?
You gotta go to Osh. You gotta go to Osh. You gotta go to Odessa. Those are my spots.
Okay.
I love those spots.
I love me some falafel.
Big Kurdish population here in Nashville, Tennessee. So
I've noticed there's like a million gyro places all over
the
place.
Yeah, it's amazing. But Nolensville Pike. Undefeated.
There's some good Egyptian food in town, too.
I never go over to that part of town.
Oh,
but I need to.
It's like...
Because I've heard they got some good shit over there.
It's the good Ethiopian food. It's there's great Indian food over there. It rules. Nolensville Pike.
That's all great.
Shout out to the Pike, Nolensville Pike.
That's all great and all, but what we have now, which is now the reason I'm never going back to Southern California again in my life? We've got In-N-Out, boys and girls.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
It's over. Okay, so it's fucking over.
So not. I'll pull the curtain back a little bit. You know, I don't want to stand here. I'm talking about music and all that stuff. I don't want you to think that I'm somehow I'm at home collecting royalty checks and sitting around trying to. No. I drive seasonally for UPS.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great gig. They just give you a bunch of packages and send you on your way, and it's awesome. It's a great gig, great holiday. A little money during the holidays and. But they put me out in freaking Lebanon. So mm-hmm. I'm out in Lebanon like every day. I drive to Lebanon every day. And I've been driving past that In-N-Out. And
I've heard the line is fucking insane.
It's getting nuts. I drive past it twice a day and it's full every day.
So
yeah,
we went to...
I'll probably wait till the hype dies down a little.
We went yesterday morning to tomorrow's ago? I don't know. Because they opened up last week.
Yeah, yeah.
This is just going to be the whole episode from now on because why not? Yeah. They opened up this past week. And, you know, of course, me being me, I was like, I want to go. Like, we got to go for dinner.
Well, we are
and
stoned, of course, right? With our sunglasses on. So we have to talk about
and my gal, she was like, have you seen these lines? And, you know, we were pulling up. They've got, like, you know, Facebook pages and stuff. People telling you how long the lines are and stuff. It was insane. I'm like, okay, maybe I don't want to wait 6 hours for a burger. And so we went, it was yesterday morning, the day before that, we went at like 10 o'clock in the morning. We were like, let's fucking do it. And I'm going to be honest. I was nervous. I shouldn't have been skeptical of my place, of my people, but I was worried.
Yeah.
I was like, is this, cause you know, no matter where you go,
you get down
Texas, still great, all the same.
Yeah.
But I was worried. And I have to say, first of all, they were efficient as all hell. We got there and they were not. We got there like before.
Oh, I'm sure they had like a couple days of absolute chaos. Yeah.
Well, they have them come in and they train them, right? They're like, they get them super up to.
Yeah. I can't even imagine what that first day is like working there.
Yeah. I heard that like for the first week, they have like a professional crew of like the best.
Like an opening team or something.
So my understanding of this is, first of all, they're, you know, in at least, you know, in SoCal and Texas where they've got them. Their hiring standards are quite higher in general, but whenever they open a new spot, they bring in like the best of the best of their crew.
Exactly. A league of extraordinary gentlemen.
We got there like 10 o'clock.
League of extraordinary burger fuckers. to make the In-N-Out shine.
Yeah.
God forbid someone in Lebanon, Tennessee leaves a bad review about the In-N-Out. Yeah, I'm sure.
All that to say, fucking nailed it, dude. It was so good.
Yeah.
Was it good?
I was like, I'm never going back. I love my family.
You got the A-team burgers.
Yeah.
Well, what's interesting, though? I mean, Nashville is a bit of a burger town. You don't really realize it till you get here and you're like, well, what do they got as like a delicacy? And everybody Nashville hot chicken, obviously. And the meat and three is kind of a thing around here, you know, unique to Nashville. But burgers, it's a burger town, like an old school.
Okay. Who's the top burgers in town?
I was watching a thing, right? And I always love watching a thing.
That's usually,
you know, so I was watching the thing and they had a list of their favorite burgers in town and I was kind of bummed out because there was one I hadn't had that was high up there, the Dream Burger.
I haven't had that either.
I've never even heard of that. But sometimes I go, it's in the parking lot of Vinyl Tap, shout out.
Oh, really?
And so I go see shows there, but I always forget they have food there. So I eat before because I don't think they have food there. And then I get there and the burger truck's there. And
you know
who's
a fire burger that's right there? Shulman's is actually really good burger.
Well, one that it comes up on the thing, obviously, they all have in common that they all think Cafe Rose is like the best. I think it's amazing. I have no problem with somebody saying it's number one. But I think 51st Street Deli has a great burger.
I've heard that.
I don't know that.
It's a West Side establishment, so it doesn't get as much love.
Yeah.
As you know, it's popular amongst the college kids, right? Because it's like over by Vanderbilt.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of, I've only ever lived on the West Side. So it's been a frequent for us, but it's awesome. It's one of those places that you walk in and you go, there's a big menu. So you get scared.
Oh, you're goddamn. You get that's scared. The worst feeling.
You get
like,
scared.
Shit, it's all going to be bad.
It's a big menu. You get scared. But it's fantastic. Everything I've ever had from there is fantastic. Shout out.
Guys, we're gonna get so many sponsorships from this episode. Oh my god!
What's the? I'm gonna have to wear sunglasses next time I go in there so they recognize me and they go, "Hey, thanks for the shout out." They don't need it, by the way. They're doing great. But
what's the one on Gallatin that everyone loves that I just? I've been there a million times over the years, and I just...
Dino's.
I don't like... Okay,
yeah, I went there once and was very unimpressed.
I've been there so many times and Dino's, never am I impressed with that burger.
Dino's is the first establishment I ever played in Nashville. 2014, 2013.
Did you play inside Dino's?
I played inside Dino's. They move a couple tables. The guy, Rick, is the old owner of that place. Rest in peace, Rick. But he was just this old guy, and he just hung out behind the bar, and he'd just make you a burger if you wanted one. And it was the best. It was so good. It was great. It was the best in town. It was so good. And, of course, nostalgia makes everything taste better. So
that's fair.
It was probably not that great of
like
a burger.
Fuck Rick, and he's dead now.
Well, you know, there's probably a lot more hand washing going on nowadays at Dino's.
That takes all the flavor out of it.
When you go, hey, I'll have the cheeseburger, you go into the bathroom, turn on the light, three rats scurry away. You go, okay, what are we doing here? We're taking our chances and we think it's going to pay off. So it's like a nice gamble of a burger joint. But now it's gotten taken over by, you know, a corporate entity. So
goddamn hand washers.
But you know what I'll say? And I do, this will never get back to them. But I will say that with the new Dino's, you know, when somebody takes over an establishment, oftentimes they change it enough that to the outside you go, oh, that's, I know what that is.
They still kept this to look like a piece of shit.
But they kept it, making it look like a fucking piece of shit dive bar. And then you walk in, and it's like, oh, that'll be $75 now for you.
Best of both worlds, guys.
It's like, well, what? A little warning would be nice. Just put a little something that makes me not think that I'm going into like a, but whatever. I don't know if that's a business model.
You know what I have to say, though, in terms of like chain food, you know what the best burger is I love out here? And I swear to God, we're going to talk about something else. Baby slaps.
Oh, yeah.
That's my like guilty food.
Hugh Babies was my go-to. However, now that In-N-Out exists here, I might never go back to Hugh Babies.
Are you going to drive?
Hugh Babies was like my In-N-Out substitute. And now that we have In-N-Out, it's like,
but are you going to drive out to... It's like past Mount Julia.
They're putting an In-N-Out right up the street here. Yeah, so I don't have to drive anywhere.
That's the talk about confidence. Yeah, they were like, we already know. We already know when they get one, they're gonna want to.
Putting five in.
Yeah. Well, hey, Kate. Okay, Five Guys. What the hell's going on with Five Guys?
Good, but
you
got to
mortgage the house.
I'm not a Five Guys.
And you know what? You know what wore out on me is they go. Somebody goes, yeah, but you know. Look how many fries they put in the bag. I'm like, the bag? Who cares? It's $80 to get a burger. What are we doing here?
I normally get a burger and fries and no drink, and it's like $20 or slightly over, which is just ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
One thing about In-N-Out that's so great, other than their great burgers, is they've kept it like very reasonable compared to every other burger place.
Is that right?
Yeah.
What's a double-double, like $6, $7?
Hey, that's not bad.
Not bad at all.
That's not bad.
I always go singles, though. I'll throw back singles.
I gotta go with the double.
So where does your singing come from?
Where do you get your ideas from?
The single is just an incorrect meat to bun ratio.
I agree.
Yeah. I get it. Don't get wrong. A double double is great, but I will go singles. I'll go like, am I one single hungry? Am I two single hungry? Am I three single hungry?
You ever see a place that offers a junior, and then they offer a double junior? And you're like, what are we doing here?
Is it double junior like a smaller junior?
I don't know. Okay. I don't know. Like somebody be like, you can get a junior, you can get a double junior. I'm like, when do we get to regular burger?
That's SpongeBob shit right there. That's SpongeBob shit.
It is. Yeah, it is. It's sad. It's really just sad.
I think we're getting to a point now. We should just leave Nashville. It's too much.
It's too much. Yeah, we gotta move out to Lebanon or something.
Yeah, oh my Lord.
Yeah. Although I will say, hey, okay, check this out. Can we give away the location of this podcast?
Let's go.
Okay, we're in Goodlettsville. Mm-hmm. I call it Greatlettsville. I love it.
Yeah, I do actually really like
Goodlettsville. Goodlettsville's great.
It's cool.
Millersville, great. Mm-hmm. You know what's up there? Place called JJ's. You ever go to JJ's?
No, never heard of it.
You like breakfast?
Yeah.
Oh my God, breakfast. JJ's, fantastic. Shout out to JJ's. Fantastic.
This might be my favorite podcast we've ever done.
Oh yeah, me and the wife, we went out the other day. It was a Sunday, and we went up to this other spot that said it was open online. I'm not trying to get that whole conversation going, but it said it was open online. And we go up there, and it wasn't open. And so we had to pivot. Mm-hmm. And so we pivoted, and we pivoted over to JJ's. Best pivot, best idea. Should have just been the egg plan from the beginning. It was so good. It was great. They're awesome. Shout out to JJ's. Great pancake. That's how you know. That's how you know, by the way.
You test
a place can fool you. A place can fool you. They can have good eggs. They can have good hash browns. They can also... This place had good pancakes, good hash browns. Everything was good. It was great. But the pancake usually is how you tell. You cut into the pancake and you go, no. But this place, great pancake. But
this is great. This is the kind of stuff that this is why I'm so happy that we do this, is so we can find fantastic.
I
know,
and sometimes I find
places.
Myself having so many great thoughts about my about the process of making art.
If only I had
art.
A microphone to talk into
well,
this about.
Well, I think about like the process of making art, and I think about all the integrity that it takes to make art and the things you have to do. And I go, maybe someday someone will ask me to go on a podcast so I can talk about those things, because somebody has to hear them. And then I start doing that, and I go, well, you know we what? Should talk about.
Burgers are art, too.
Yeah. Burgers are art, too. Hey, yeah. Don't let it, let them fool you.
My God.
I mean, hey, listen, it's an incredible skill to be able to, you know.
It's true.
To make any kind of
food. I do actually think
culinary arts.
We were talking last week. We had Jeremy Ivey on, and he was talking about how actually he was saying how he oftentimes thinks of the parallel between food and music. It was him, right, Ryan? I think I'm pretty sure it was Jeremy, where he was saying that it was it was really the parallel between. We had too many people on this damn show. they all muddled together in my head. But no, whereas it really is. There are many parallels between food and music, and the way that we interact with them, the way that we work through them, and I think that's. Yeah. I think once you see the sort of the magic of how you can create something in one world,
definitely
that really can open your mind up if you're willing to to see that kind of manifest in everything else.
Dude, I'm about to shout out an Instagram account.
Oh my God, let's go!
Shout out to Flavor Notes.
Flavor Notes
on Instagram. This young lady, she posts recommendations for music that goes along with, or dishes that go along with songs or albums.
Oh, that's a cool idea.
Like things that you, So she pairs them up to what she thinks go together. And it's great. It's great. You get to learn about food. You get to learn about music.
I've never even thought about pairing food with certain music.
Yeah. There was another person. I don't know their name, so I won't shout them out. But I'm just going to steal their idea. I had a friend in town, and she told me she went to a holiday market, and someone was selling cassette tapes, but the fold-out, the jacket, was recipes. And so it was mixtapes of like things that like maybe you cook along with it or, you know, I don't know how they do it. I would imagine it's like you pop the tape in, listen to it and cook the recipe.
Or maybe it's someone like, reading you the instructions.
Yeah. Well, it's like take one if you're going to listen to the song, this is the food you should make. This is the food you should eat while you listen to my music, and here's how to make it.
Yeah. I think so. Or like.
I like that.
Yeah. I thought that was really interesting. I was like, that's like a fun.
That's cute.
That's a fun, that's nice. Interesting thing. There's so much shit in the world that you just go like, when you see something like that, here's how cynical that it'll make you. You know, I listen to the news every day.
Sorry.
Like an idiot. I listen to the news every day. I somehow think I need to be informed. And then I get informed.
Yeah, you don't.
I get informed and then I go, oh, I already knew that. Everything was shit.
I already knew that, and now I'm sad.
Yeah, totally. Now it's just like beating myself over the... Like once a week, maybe, you check in with the news, and you go, oh, he did that? Oh, my God.
There you go.
You know, it can make you very cynical. You can poo-poo certain ideas. You hear an idea, and maybe my knee-jerk reaction is like... My knee-jerk reaction is just like, you know, but then you stop and you think about it and you go, that's beautiful. That's an incredible thing to do for somebody in a world slowly caving in. It's a beautiful thing to do for somebody.
Like the social media stuff, to me, I have to kind of keep it at arm's reach just because it can be such a sucker of time, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But there's, and I don't like to be cynical about it, but there is so much awesome stuff out there. The ability for people's creativity to be funneled into that kind of thing is amazing. Like earlier today, I saw this guy on Instagram. He has an account where he makes paper mache animals.
Great.
Where he'll make, he made an entire woolly mammoth head
I wish I could remember this guy's account to shout him out, but he made an entire woolly mammoth head, massive, like fucking huge, out of paper mache, and does all of these. Like, he did this giant giraffe, all this crazy shit. And I think that is so cool that we have. That we have the ability to see all of the dumb fucking cool shit that people
Yeah, like that guy who grabs stuff really fast.
Yeah.
Have you seen that guy?
Yeah, that guy. Well, I just think about like what, like imagine all of the security footage that would just be stuck in security cameras.
Yeah, exactly.
Or on VHS tape, wherever they go nowadays. Yeah. If we didn't have the internet to show us people, you know, falling into holes, all this kind of stuff that we've come to depend on for happiness in our lives.
This might say more about me as a person than I want it to, but that's one of my favorite things to do is to lie in bed like 2 a.m. and watch fucking World Star Hip Hop.
Come on. Oh my God. Come on. Yeah, there was something that I saw. that was like, it was like, something where it was like something about how bad it is to like be watching something late. It was like if you're staying up past 10 p.m., you're basically killing yourself. Uh-huh. And then it cut to me at 3 a.m. watching a Chinese man clean his house. it was just a guy with the phone this far from his face. And I was like, oh man, yeah. Because it's so funny when you look at somebody on their phone and you go. God, look at you, idiot. Yeah. You're craning your neck. You're like, you're just like staring mindlessly. You look like an idiot. And then you just look around for another minute and you see somebody else in front of you and you go, yeah, really nice to be on my phone right now. And then you pull out your phone and you're looking at it and you're like, it doesn't cross your mind at all that you also look like an idiot staring at your phone mindlessly. But I work sometimes in warehouses and I'll go in the break room with the intention. I'll be like, I'm not looking at my phone. I got a 15-minute break. I'm going to think about stuff. I'm going to like
thoughts. Do that.
Have you ever been the only person not on your phone?
Oh, yeah. It's depressing
in a room?
As hell. Yeah.
It also is kind of weird and creepy. Like, you kind of look like it's like, this is the day that broke the camel's back. It's like, I can't do this job anymore. You look you look so depressed when you don't have
your phone. We were hanging out last night and we were saying how one of the things we both love to do is like forget our phone or leave our phone somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
Like, go to the grocery store and I'm leaving the phone.
Yeah, you just got to not have it on.
It can be so nice.
Yeah. Oh, it's great. But then I find myself. I have to like do like a quick move because I'll like go to reach.
Oh, and it's not there.
Like, I go to reach, and it's not there, and I just kind of do like a like just pat.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, all right. Oh, that's a good
slap
song.
Your own ass a little bit.
It's a good song. They got a Kroger. This guy. You know, try to play it off like I wasn't just trying to reach frantically for my phone like a rat in a maze.
We're all just so addicted. When you're making music at this point, does any of that shit come into your mind in terms of like how you're going to integrate that? Like, this is a song I could do a clip of or whatnot. Like, does any of that filter in?
Yeah, it does. And I try to do it in a way that like I'm enjoying it. I'm like, this would be fun to like, that's the hard part about it. Like, we were bringing it full circle to when I walked in the door. Anytime a routine gets difficult, this is the definition of a lack of discipline. Anytime a routine enters the no fun zone, I'm good. I'm going to pivot, go to something else. Pivot's the word of the day, by the way. I'm going to do something else. And so a lot of times with TikTok, I'm like, I get like a solid, like a 10-day streak where I'm posting every day. Cause that's what they tell you. You got to post every day. Got to have something every day. So I post every day. And then I just can't. I just go like, I got nothing else to like anything after I did all the stuff that's fun and creative and interesting. And after this, it's just going to be like me trying to get you to look at this. And I feel like I'm just like, this is not my,
I feel like that's good though, because if you are in that position where you're just not feeling it, but you're forcing it anyways, like that's going to come through and whatever you make, it's not going to work.
And listen, some people, it depends on what you want too. Like, I'm not really interested in being like really, really, I don't know. I'm just not interested in like having a lot of views on the internet. Although I do know it translates to people coming to the shows, and I would like ultimately all the time for more people to be at the shows.
Yeah.
There's always room for more people at the shows. Just a quick PSA.
In case you're worried.
PSA to anybody out there.
Everyone go buy
contemplating. There's always room at the shows. Let me tell you that. So I'm always trying to, but you know, it's like it is what it is and it will be what it will be. It's just like, I can't naturally, you know, what's the Martin Scorsese quote? What's most personal is most creative. Like, mm-hmm. I just can't, like, I don't know. Sometimes I have fun with it. Sometimes I don't. And when I, and that's not a good recipe for consistency, and you have to be consistent with it and blah, blah, blah. So,
and also I find, at least using this, this silly show as an example, you know, there's been times where we've been really, really, you know, balls to the walls on trying to get, extra content out there and do all do all this other stuff, whether it's clips or whatnot.
Yeah.
And you can feel like, okay, it can feel like productivity, and I'm sure on a certain level it is, because you're putting more out there. But then I find when we kind of just stick with our rhythm of things,
mm-hmm. yeah,
it's one, it's more fun. You're mm-hmm. just, you kind of enjoy yeah. it more. You know, it's, and also it's like, okay, well, if something's gonna blow up, so to speak, or whatever, if you're going to yeah. get eyes on something, I want eyes on the thing that we do, you
right.
know? And,
right.
and don't get me wrong. Again, I'm sure that there's a balance there. Like anything, right. you've got to kind of have to find that sweet spot. But yeah, it's that constant kind of dilemma that I think every creative person has is, okay, how much do I lean into this because I need to in order to feel like I'm being productive, and yeah. how much of this can I just sort of, you totally. Know, wait around for inspiration or whatever.
Totally. And I think also there's a lot of people who naturally through Instagram Reels and YouTube and all that stuff realized, oh, this is what I like to do.
Yeah.
Oh, I like to do, these short form videos. I like to do this stuff. Okay, great. Yeah. Hell yeah. Do it. But then like the rest of us are like, being instructed to be like, well, you got to yeah. get these numbers up. You got to do this.
And
do
it's
that.
Hard and it's, because like, I that's not, and this is going to sound like bitching. I know it is. Cause it is, but that's not what we signed up for. You know what I mean?
Like yeah,
there,
yeah,
and,
yeah.
and don't give me, and there are other things, there are other facets of promotion, let's say.
Yeah.
That's always been the case for.
Yeah.
Whether it's having to do press for an album release or, you know, insert right. whatever thing that you as an artist don't want to do, but you got to do it because, okay.
Yeah.
It is different though, in a sense, because this is so, all those other elements of promotion that I think were prominent in the past and still are yeah. prominent now that artists had a problem with. You could keep them at arm's length. It sure. was like you could go into work mode. That's what you're doing. This stuff on social media is so invasive, and it's so in your personal life.
Yeah.
It's like I think for a lot of people, not everyone, some people I think can understand that they're still playing the game, yeah. so to speak. But for a lot of people, yeah. I feel like that knee-jerk reaction can come from the fact that this feels like it's crossing into that personal territory that a lot of the other elements of promotion don't. And some people just feel like I don't like myself, I don't want to participate. Like this isn't the thing that I do. I'm happy to do the sort of grunt work and the crappy stuff I don't want to do in order sure. to help promote. But there gets to be a point where it feels almost like whoring yourself out in a way that yeah. I think a lot of people aren't comfortable with, yeah. you know?
Do you ever like accidentally click on like a ad for something and you're like, well, goddamn, now I'm going to, I can't wait to hear about James Taylor coming to the Ryman. Every fucking day I'm going to get ticket. I'm going to get advertisement for tickets for James yeah. Taylor because I clicked on it on accident. Not that I wouldn't go see James Taylor, I just, you know.
Yeah.
That was a bad example, but that actually happened.
James, you're
so
great.
So anyways.
You're great.
Yeah, I think you got to find a way of doing it that doesn't feel like you're whoring it out, you know.
Yeah.
Well, you got to do what like you want to do rather yeah. than looking at what other people are doing and being like, oh, I have to do that. You got to find your own way of doing it.
Well, what happened too is there was a time where out of necessity you had to rely on a person to be a promoter. You had to get with somebody in a town who could bring people to your show. And now with the internet, venues think that a few collaborative posts to your 4,000 followers on Instagram or scale up to whatever you want, even 9, 10, 12, 15,000 followers on Instagram. They think a collaborative post is going to bring people into shows. Yeah. And at a certain level, it probably will. But there's so much more that once you get past that, those number counts on Instagram, where there's other things going on, management wise and PR teams and all that stuff happening, that like for someone at a level of like just playing kind of mid-level, not even mid-level, but low-level venues, house shows, stuff like that, you're relying so much town to town on people who know people in that town. And it's like a venue used to, you know, put up posters, they'd advertise, they'd do all this stuff, they'd have a write-up in the paper, they have their schedules and things and all that stuff. And now it's like you book a place in a town you've never been to, and they agree to have you there, and then they want you, you do like two collaborative posts with
them.
The
expectation is you're going to be the one bringing people.
And the idea is that I've never been there.
And it's,
I would, and listen, if you had a list, if you were like, here's a bunch of stuff that works, and some people do this, they go like, if you call into this radio station, this college program will have you. If you want to come into town a day early, if you can, and be on the radio, that'll work, and like those stuff. And those are great, and I love places like that, and I do all that stuff when I can. But the idea that like that anything is going to beat putting up posters at the record store, at the level of like, I don't know what the metric is, a few thousand Instagram followers or whatever, like nothing will beat that. Mm-hmm. That always works way better than whatever scheme, bands in town, email lists,
you think
all
so,
that
though?
Stuff.
It's this weird catch 22 though.
Truly,
it's this weird catch 22 because on one hand, I love the fact that so much is now laid at the hands of the artists, and so much, there's so much ability and access in ways that just was not there in the past for artists. That being said, now there is this expectation on artists to take on the responsibility and skill set of other people that that truly have those skill sets to be able to do those things well.
Totally.
And again, it's like in my mind, at the end of the day, I would rather live in that world.
Yeah.
And I'm happy we're there. But it's this point where we haven't quite recognized all of the intricacies of that. And I think especially for places like, you know, venues when they are booking artists, there's a little bit that's getting lost in translation at this point because we're not aware of how that change is occurring.
Totally. And I think venues think they're cutting out the middleman and saving some money or something like that, or like unnecessary money. But I still
need people there.
I think that middleman works. I mean, every time I play a venue and there's a dedicated person who is working on bringing people there, it's so much better than the times when there isn't a person there. I play whatever I can. So I will play a mix of like venues, legit, just like rock clubs, folk clubs, and then house shows. And house shows are just always better. And this is, hopefully no venues see this and don't reply to my emails. But house shows are just always better because it's, you have these people going, hey, we're having a show at our house. You should come by. They're telling their friends. They're telling people that you don't have access to. Mm-hmm. I don't have access to their neighbors. But they do. And they are doing a lot of work to get people to come it's not even that I can do and won't do, but it's like, it's just work I can't do. I can't access certain people.
I haven't toured in a little while. It's been a hot minute. But I have to say at this point in time where everything is out, I feel like if I was going to be putting a tour together, I would be wanting to do pretty much exclusively house shows.
Yeah, totally.
Because you do have that, you know, there's going to be bodies in the room.
Yeah.
And plus you can usually a place to sleep.
Yeah, totally. But and free dip. Hey,
yeah,
hey, you like hummus? Well, you're gonna start.
Yeah.
Start touring. You're gonna love hummus.
But I think that and those things will, again, they'll work themselves out over time, and I think, or I imagine they will. But it's an interesting time for musicians in that regard.
Yeah.
Which I just don't think it's not really been a thing until the last, you know, 15 years.
Totally. Also, I find myself whenever I book a venue, I'm like worried immediately. I'm just like, okay, now it's on me to get these people out here.
Yeah.
And I'm going to try, and I'm going to do it by, I'll have who is like a popular person in town or like a friend in town that I like that might be able to bring some people out. Mm-hmm. And like, okay, well, we'll get with them and we'll see what we can open for you. You can open for us, all this stuff. And then you just immediately start worrying about like, well, there's going to be overhead for this venue. If I do a bad job of promoting this and nobody comes, then they're not going to have me back. There's all this stuff that's going on. Whereas like when you're just in somebody's house, it's like the most pure exchange of art you can find. It's just like, I'm just in somebody's living room.
Yeah.
And we're hanging out.
Sometimes there's pizza,
I feel
too,
like part cool. of that, too. It's pure, too. I also don't feel like the venue should also be a place where people would just want to come anyway.
Totally agree.
Right? Like, there yeah. are these venues that are just venues, and nobody is going to go there unless, yeah. like,
you know, it's
there's
like,
an artist playing who's, like, trying totally. To get people to come there.
Do you remember when we were
which,
in high school,
like,
Brian?
Playing places like that, I feel like, suck. You remember, there's tons yeah. of places like that in San Diego.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Do you remember when we were in high school?
Epicenter?
Yeah, or, like, House of Blues, shit
yeah.
like that.
Oh, you yeah, know, yeah,
where
yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
you're just, all you're doing is you're scamming, yeah. you're scamming middle-class kids.
Oh, yeah.
Totally. Oh, yeah, we're going to...
The audacity of a venue to be like, yeah, yeah, you can play here, and you also have to fill up yeah. our
you
establishment.
Also, you also have to buy these tickets at wholesale and yeah. then sell them to yeah. your friends. Yeah, there's all those fun little scams when you're in high school bands and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, no, I did my fair share of those.
I think my favorite places to play are places where people just show up.
Yeah, because they were going to go there anyways, and you happen
yeah.
to be there.
Yeah.
yeah.
It's like it's a community thing. It's all community-oriented. Mm-hmm. And I think eventually someone gets to a point where they're, whatever you would say, big enough, popular enough, that they've created their own community, their own, they have their fans. They have their own community of people that will that they can find no matter what
yeah.
and that will find them and follow them around and stuff like that. And that's awesome. That's amazing. That's great. But yeah. for everyone else, it's like you need these people to be stewards for you and curate places, and hopefully it's a beneficial relationship where you can also help them pay their rent, and you can, you know, everything kind of works out. But
at the end of the day, if you're running a business, you're running a business.
That's it.
That being said, the most successful businesses are inevitably going to be those businesses like In-N-Out, where
yes.
people are invested in the thing that you're doing because you do it well and because there aren't other people who do it. People are going to show up to In-N-Out whether or not they're advertising right,
right.
now, because we're invested in the thing that they've made.
Right.
And it's the same thing whether if you're creating a venue, right? Like, you want to make a venue that people are innately interested in, and that should in my mind be your goal.
Well, it's got to right. be more than just a venue, right?
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
got to be like a
yeah,
bar or a totally. Restaurant or brewery. It's got to have something going for it.
I can't wait for the Ken Burns documentary about how breweries have saved music. It's crazy. They're the only places that will pay you
yeah,
money.
No, it's yeah. true.
It's crazy. And then you go like, I mean, I don't know. I don't know. 110% of all my friends are working musicians. And so everybody is just like, you know, it's all brewery gigs. When you're in a pinch, it's a brewery gig. And you're like, it's amazing. All just from like, you know, I don't know how that mean. I guess.
And I feel like you always get the best crowds there too.
Yeah, definitely the brewery.
Yeah, I don't.
Yeah,
I,
no, it's crazy. It's just crazy. It's like, if these people can figure it out, then why can't the other people figure it out? It's the same thing with Nashville. And here we go. We'll go down this road.
Let's throw down. Let's go.
Here we go down this road. Nashville, believe it or not, Music City, USA, no money playing live. There's
nothing.
No money in
you
playing
the bars
live.
And shit.
Well, even on Broadway, you go down to Broadway for what it is, for what's going on down there, that mafioso wet dream that's going on down on Broadway, blowing up the library building, the parking structure and all that stuff, that allegedly. There's somebody's going to come after me.
Was there a theory about that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
well, I mean,
first time
thing.
I'm hearing
what
about it.
What could have possibly happened is the question. It's like, a structure.
Because like the parking garage caught on fire or something, right?
What happened was, as far as I know, and we feel free to keep this in or not, but allegedly, from what I understand, the official story is that an electric vehicle was charging and it caught on fire. And it happened to be next to a room that had was storing propane tanks.
Oh.
And this room didn't always store propane tanks, but up until recently it had started. This is allegedly what I heard, okay? And that made the whole thing kaboom. And then they got to work real quick on cleaning up the lot.
Yeah.
And I would be, well, time will tell. Still remains a conspiracy theory. Time will tell if they build a new parking garage for the library, or if that land now is worth a bajillion dollars
yeah.
and they put a freaking Margaritaville 2 up right there.
Margarita 2. Margaritaville 2. Electric
who knows
Boogaloo.
What's going to happen. But
you think it was like
the corruption
the developer
down there.
Mafia, like just taking a
Dude,
property
the corruption
out
down
to...
on Broadway is crazy. Yeah, it's nuts.
I haven't even heard.
I mean, the whole thing is just such a insanity, right? It's just like, It's like, oh yeah, we have all these, like, you know, we're this moral Christian community and all this stuff, and then it's like, hey, how much money can we make with people getting alcohol poisoning? Oh, okay, let's there's some gray area on the whole blue laws. Let's figure it out.
I'll tell you one thing. When Brian and I, before we moved out here, we came out to visit one time, like right beforehand, because this was a very last minute decision on our parts, and we came out to Nashville, and this was back when I drank. And we had some fun on Broadway.
Of course, that's what it's there for. Yeah. It's there to have fun, but they're making a lot of money, and they're not. And you talk to musicians who play down there, and they're like, "Yeah, I play 12 hours a day, and you know that's how I'm making a living." But it's not like they're not making an incredible living. They're not like,
and the living they are making is probably mostly from tips, not even from the bars paying them.
Yeah, and I get it. There's like a certain amount of, like, you know, they're gaining more than just financial reward from that. They're playing all the time, you know. It's like that whole 10,000 hours with the Beatles thing,
but
or whatever.
I feel like there's no reason the bars shouldn't be paying good.
That's
money.
Exactly
because
it.
And then, you know, they're bringing in a fuck ton.
And outside of Broadway, there are very few other places that will actually pay you anything to play there. You know, and so it's tough to be like, you know, trying to work around town, and you're trying to play, and you put a band together, and you want to like play with your band, but like everybody at the end of the night is, you know, splitting $7, and it's like, and I get it, boohoo, it's like, you know, push the tip jar, make your money, like do your thing, but at the same time it's just like a basic kind of like I don't know, it's like a community thing. It's like, I know these places are making money, I know they have money, and it's like, I'm not coming in and doing nothing, but I'm coming in and doing this thing. And it's like, that's, I think it was, oh God, I'm going to forget who quoted this, but it was like, if you want to respect someone, pay them. I forget who said that. Maybe it was Mos Def. Mos Def said, if you want to respect someone, pay them. And it's like that kind of thing where it's just like, you know, people are coming in playing in your bar. And I get it that if I don't want to play there, you have 100 other people in line that want to play.
But I think it, like, that is naturally going to happen in a town with so many musicians.
I just don't see,
because if you turn down a gig
because it doesn't
pay enough, like there's 100 other people who are going to take it.
And that's the thing. And that, but it's like, I get it if there is no revenue being generated, and I get it, it's a slow night. I mean, I absolutely understand, you know, all around the country, I work for percentage of the bar. All around the country, I work for 10% of the bar sales or whatever they get at the door, minus the overhead. We come to an agreement. Mm-hmm. So I know it works. I know it works in all these. I know it works in Poughkeepsie, New York. I know it works in, you know, San Diego. I know it works in Oklahoma City. I know it works everywhere else. And then you get to Music City and they're like, there's too many people. It's not going to work. And it's like, I just don't buy it. I don't believe it. I think it works no matter what, no matter how many people. The same, it's like, you know, those same people are still going to get a spot, even if I turn it, you know, there's plenty of spots for places for people to play.
I wonder what happens in the market if you do have an establishment that tries something like that. I wonder, because in my mind, my mind tends to drift to the fact that there's just no incentive there for them.
Yeah.
So it's like, I'd be curious to know how that plays out.
Well,
because if you do happen to put that on the table for artists, I wonder how much more revenue they would be generating.
Yeah. See, I just don't believe that it's, I think down on Broadway, sure, I get it. People are there to drink. They're not necessarily there to see music, but if they go into a bar and they don't see music, they're in Music City, it's going to be a problem. I get it. They work out their own thing. But outside of that, you can run a venue like you do in any other town. I'll shout out Dee's Lounge. Dee's Lounge is,
Dee's does a
fantastic. They charge a cover. They're doing great. You know, people are drinking. I go to Dee's. People are drinking. People they have no problem selling booze at Dee's. It's great. They're doing their thing. But they also know that, you know, they can charge a cover and they can give it to us. And then we can, you know, live and die off of what we bring, you know, how many paying customers we bring to the bar. And that, I think that's just fair. I think that's just the way to do it. And there's all these other people that are trying to get off on the, like, you know, well, this is the way it's been done. This is just kind of like the way it is here and stuff like that. And I'm like, okay, great. Yeah. But there's a place in this town that's not doing that. And it's like working out great.
It is a cultural thing. Like any cultural thing of the sort, it takes a while to steer that ship. You know what I mean?
Oh, 1,000%. Yeah. And there's places that will never, they'll just never.
I think D's would still have, like, I think D's doesn't do that because they have to do that.
No, no, not at all.
Right? So, like, they could just not do that and they would just, they'd be fine.
Yes, absolutely.
Which, God bless them for doing that.
Hey, you're not going to hear a bigger fan. Yeah, I love D's Lounge.
But then also at the same time, to just kind of piggyback off that a little bit, kind of like what we were talking about earlier, that is, I think you're right, Brian. But at the same time, they've also developed this culture there and this sort of expectation there with their patrons that this is what we do. Yeah. So both those things can be true at the same time.
Yeah.
Right. And I do think that if you had more places that were doing something similar to what they're doing, they could nurture that culture as well. And they would reap the benefits of that as
totally.
Well.
Totally.
But
totally. And I think, you know, people people will go, yes, I'm fine with paying $5 to $10 at the door, but there's not always the opportunity for them to put $5 or $10 in the tip jar.
Yeah.
That's the way it would maybe equal out if you were to play devil's advocate. Like, well, they can put their cover in the tip jar. It just doesn't always work that way. But if you can get them just come in the door, the business.
At the end of the day, you can take your $5, you can bring it there, you can go somewhere else. You know what I mean? So it's,
And it's just like, And there's so much in this town where it's like, you know, some of the most incredible musicians in the world are playing from 6 to 8 in a bar somewhere. And it's just like,
getting paid. No.
Well, it sometimes, but I think also like there's not an expectation of like, not that they have to pay to see this, but that you're supporting them to do it.
I think the thing a lot of people also don't realize about Nashville is, yes, there's absolutely people here who, especially on the Broadway circuit, make their living playing here. The vast majority of musicians here use this as sort of a central...
Yes.
They use it as a hub. They use it as a home base, and they're going out in Kentucky or wherever else they have new
the
playing
around. The bus picks up here.
Exactly. Yeah, totally. And I think that's another thing that people... a lot of folks who don't live here, who aren't in the music scene, probably don't realize a lot of it is that there's still great opportunity here, but it really does function in a different way for most people than if you were living in, like, you know... If you were living in somewhere like Boston, where there's probably more of a
And in those cases, I think a lot of those guys are like totally fine with playing. They're just like, I'm just trying to get my reps in while I'm not on tour, or I'm trying to play something different than the thing I play every night with so and so to pay my mortgage. And I think that's fine. That's totally fine. But I think it's the idea that like I see it working in everywhere else in the world. And then this one place is like, well, you know, we can't. What are you going to do? We haven't done that ever. So where would we start? It's like, okay, great. Thanks. I'll just be over here doing my thing. This isn't going to affect my performance at all. The fact that you don't respect me at all as a musician, you're just trying to use me to keep people in this bar.
Brian, you want to open a bar?
That would actually be kind of cool.
Called the Rusik Bar.
But that requires money, which I don't have.
Quite
in
a
meantime,
bit,
we'll just keep
today.
Doing this. Damn.
Yeah, you might as well. Yeah. Hell yeah.
Dude, thank you so much for doing this. This was a ball. This is so much fun. The
we'll
performance is sounding great.
Yeah, thank you.
Sure.
Oh, yeah, we'll have you back sometime.
Yeah, this was killer. We got to talk about
We did at least 30 minutes on burgers.
Yeah. Don't get me started on, anything else, I guess.
That was fantastic, man. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Pizza. Where do you go for pizza? Here's the question. No, where do you go for Chinese food in this town?
Dude, so there's a good place right over here.
Okay.
The best, I can't say I've been to a shit ton of Chinese places.
When he says best, it's like shitty Chinese, but
it's exactly what you want.
It's exactly what I want. It's called China Cottage. It's in...
Yeah. I've been. It's in the... it's by Garden Fresh.
No.
What's the one by Garden Fresh?
I don't think I've been to that one.
Okay, China Cottage. Okay, I haven't been.
What else is in that?
Oh, is it?
It's in a little like shopping center.
Yeah,
just down
like
the street.
Right before Rivergate Mall.
Okay,
it's literally just right outside the neighborhood.
We need to do a whole podcast about the Rivergate Mall. I love that. I went wedding ring shopping in the JCPenney's once.
Really?
Oh, one of the best times. One of the best times. Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, well, the rest in peace. It's no longer with us, the Rivergate Mall.
Is it closed down?
It closed it. They're knocking it out.
Like, I'm surprised.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know how it lasted as long as it did.
I was not surprised at all,
But I guess they're turning it into probably apartments and shit.
Yeah. That's going to be a shame. RIP to the Rivergate Mall.
Well, I heard they're also going to put...
I'll have to try it, because... That's the one. That's it's the very one food solid. I miss so much, and I can't ever find there's, it to my liking.
In East Nash, there's a spot right down the street from me called Hunan Express.
See, I've been there. I thought it was kind of weak.
Just, it is. It's not great, but to me, it's like it's right there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'll be Chinese like once every like 6 months.
That will make a place better than it is.
Oh, for sure.
If it's right there, if a place is right there, it might make it a little better than it is.
There you go.
And then you start, and then you bring somebody. Oh, and you're like, yeah, I got to just tell you, it's right here.
I'd be afraid to go in. Honest, I'd be afraid to go in and get my food. It's one of those, but I just have, I'm either going to drive through or have to.
Sure. Oh, that's a drive through.
It's a drive through.
Yeah, it's
Chinese
definitely
place.
Right there. Yeah, for sure. That's I'm not going there. But no, shout out to Hunan Express. They're
there
great.
We go. There you go.
But yeah, it's hard to find them. But
yeah, it's slowly but surely we're getting some more good food.
Okay. Yeah. All right. We'll be back. We'll be back after this break with pizza and. Anyways, thanks, guys.
That was killer. Thank you so much. That was tough.
Heck yeah.
That was so tough. You know what the pizza is?
Oh god. Yeah. We need to make-